afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Monday, June 11th, 2018. Well, hello, Dave.
Happy Monday, Melody.
Happy Monday. And doesn't seem to be of a blue Monday, so it's a good day. And let's get started with gold right now. It looks, it's hovering around that $1,300 level, up a few cents. At least it's not negative. So we'll take that as a positive. Silver had a nice day, up 13 cents, hitting $17. Platinum was down $2 at $908, and palladium was up 13 at $1,027. I'd have to assume the USDX is stronger, and it is up 0.03 at 93.58. Crude oil is up 0.47 at 66.21. And the paper markets today were positive, of course. The Dow was up off the highs, though, of the day, only up a few points, 7 to be exact, 25,324. The NASDAQ is up 14, 7,659. And the S&P was up 2, 2,781. The euro is holding at 118. What's the 10-year yield? 2.96%. Up 0.02, and I guess everyone is waiting for Fed speak this week. And after we get the speak that's going on over in Singapore. But before we get to that, and forgive me, Dave, I just want to make a little bit of a comment. You know, I got a phone call today, and somebody just started ranting on me, saying, called me names, saying, you know, because of something I said on the radio she didn't agree with. And I respect that someone doesn't have to agree with me 100% of the time. I mean, these programs where we talk things through, we get to change people's minds. My mind can be changed oftentimes. That's what it's all about, you know, and oftentimes we talk to people who can't sit down and talk. You just call people's names and say it's this way and that way, and, you know, you're disgusting and so forth and whatnot. Now, those calls irritate me. Number one, they upset me because I'm not that type of a person and I take it personally. And then after I get through that personal feeling, then I get a little, I think it through. And I was accused of being a hypocritical Christian because I had a little bit of a rant on my garbage bill, because it went up due to the state of Maryland having to address the company was forced into the minimum law wage. And I was accused of, you know, I didn't think that garbage men should make it have an increase in wages. That wasn't the issue. The issue isn't that the people at the garbage people don't deserve a raise. Of course they do. The point is when you hear the word minimum wage, or two words, minimum wage thrown about, there's consequences and prices rise. And so often you hear that prices don't rise and it's better for the economy, therefore it's going to come back through the economy and everyone's going to be happy and everything. Well, it's not necessarily the way it works. In today's world, we talk daily about the amount of debt that are strapped to the people, the cost of health care. It was a point to show that everything is rising in prices. For one reason or another, my trash collector happened to use that as the reason our bill was rising. That was the point. Everything is rising. Prices are rising. Healthcare is rising, regardless of the reason. And it's going to make it more difficult for people to take care of their daily needs. So if for some reason she was able to claim that I was a, you know, hypocritical Christian out of that, I don't see how. If anybody ever has a problem with what I say, how about calling me and say, Melody, you were on the radio and you made this statement. Could you explain it, please? and then I will allow them to explain what they think. This is how humans are supposed to communicate, or we no longer humans. So it's about communication, ladies and gentlemen. It's the same thing with President Trump. It doesn't mean that I disagree with everything he's doing. I'm just trying to see through what the outcome is going to be without making these phony predictions that everybody else out there makes that never come true. You know, maybe I do have to change, you know, certain things and say, yeah, you know what, maybe, you know, that was a pretty good deal. Or so it's all about communicating. So anyway, well, I need to get that off my chest.
Well, I'm glad you did. It's important for us to be reminded about, you know, hey, we're all human beings here. And I, you know, I've long had a thing about, you know, labels. Labels, just in general, I think detract from effective communication, whether you call someone a liberal, whether you call someone conservative, whether you call someone a hypocritical Christian. They're all the same in that they're a label. And attempting to pigeonhole another individual, you know, into something that, you know, regardless of whom you are, there are very few people, in my estimation, in the world, who will not have some sort of personal bias about one thing or another. You know, will allow them to hear a label such as that and not have some sort of defensive reaction to it. So rather than having called you a hypocritical Christian, I agree. Let's do a Stephen Covey suggested
years ago. You're
agreeing
that I'm a hypocritical Christian?
No.
I'm not.
I'm agreeing with you that the way to have approached that, as the way I think we approach all communications, is, you know, Stephen Covey said it best: first seek to understand, then to be understood. And, you know, I think the right way for that caller to have approached you, I think, is as you suggested. Melody, I heard you say this. What did you mean by that? And then just have a conversation, and rather, you know, have it detract into a battle of name calling. I mean, look at what happened over the weekend. I mean, you know, which we'll get to in a minute or two. But you know, this name calling, you know, at a global leader level, particularly when, you know, the stakes are all that much higher. It's just counterproductive. And, you know, I say to my fellow human beings, listeners, enough is enough. You know, treat each other with kindness and an open mind. My God.
Yeah, it's so anyway, I had to get up because I think everybody who really knows me knows that I'm not a hypocrite, you know, not a hypocritical Christian. And I think everybody who truly knows me. But I was a little shocked. But I thought, where there's one person who thinks that, there might be another one, and another. And that is why I wanted to bring this topic up, and to because it's and hopefully she stands alone, but and I'm going to call her after the program. She didn't give me her name or nothing. I do have caller ID on my phone. I rarely look at it when people call, but for her I did, and I'm going to call her, and you know, we'll talk it through. But anyway, so I got a little jittery and a little fired up prior to the show. So anyway, let's go. I'm going to talk about cryptocurrencies. Cryptocurrency theft hits $1.1 billion in the last 6 months. Cyber thieves are taking advantage of malware that's offered on the dark web to steal digital currency. A total of $1.1 billion in cryptocurrencies was stolen. And cybersecurity company Carbon Black said that the data from the FBI's Internet Crime Center showed the volume of cryptocurrency theft was almost equal to the $1.3 billion in victim losses from Internet crime that was reported for all of 2016. So it suggests that this theft is being perpetrated through the dark web marketplaces. There's malware for this. These malware offerings have an average listing price of $224. So you can steal $1.3 billion, depending, for $224. And they're geared towards the unsophisticated users. So according to Carbon Black, there are now an estimated 12,000 marketplaces and 34,000 offerings related to crypto theft for hackers.
Sounds like a hobby worth pursuing, Melody. Looking for some spare change.
Representing
abstract as it is.
I know. It represents a $6.7 million illicit economy. CNBC reported that Bitcoin skyrocketed 1,300% last year.
Dropped 10% over the weekend, $42 billion.
Yes.
Drop in value.
So if you remember Mt. Gox, that was the largest Bitcoin exchange, was the victim of the first high-profile hack.
What's it called?
Mt. Gox, G-O-X.
G-O-X.
Yeah, that was the first, that was back in 2011, but they were the first one to get hit. They were the first victim of this hacking in the cryptocurrencies. So more recently, the hackers stole $530 million worth of cryptocurrency called NEM from Japanese exchange Coincheck and South Korean exchange Ubit. Lost 17%. You lost 17% of its digital assets in another hack. And I don't mean to make light of this, because I know a lot of my, I don't know a lot of my customers, but I know a few of my customers are involved in cryptocurrencies, and they've all promised me that they're going to, you know, turn around and buy gold with it and everything. But I'll tell you what, you know, it's and I know everyone thinks it will never happen to them. Oh, it's not going to happen, and, you know, it'll recover, and I don't have to worry, and so forth. And, you know, it amazes me, Dave, the dark web. I don't know much about it. But it's like, and you know technology. I mean, why do they allow the dark web to continue?
Well, I don't know the answer to that. You know, it's like... I don't know the answer to that. It's like, why did all these social media companies allow and continue? Why are there sites that you know terrorists can go to and communicate with one another? You know, how do they exist? You know, and you know, like, I guess most of them have been limited to the dark web now, but you know, just up until you know fairly recently. And then there were literally thousands of sites on Facebook and Instagram. You know, it's nuts.
And who are these hackers? I mean, how many of them are governments that are doing this? I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, but anyway, I don't know that much about the dark web, other than the majority of the items on there are illegal. It's criminal. Where they harvest organs and drugs and everything else that you can name, pornography. I don't you know.
Well, it's the new warfare. It's the warfare of the new millennium. You know, you got to believe. Well, we know that some of it's state sponsored. You know, whether it's Russia, China, North Korea.
United States.
Let's not leave this out of this. You know, but certainly, you know, from a non-Western viewpoint, you know, we've come to learn more and more that, say in Russia's case, that you know Putin has so much to gain by disrupting the Western way in general. Mm-hmm. Certainly, you know, attempts at undermining the Western alliance, whether it's NATO, whether it's, you know, the Eurozone, whether it's the G7, what have you. You know, the players that are not so sympathetic or have our interests at heart. You know, we've found that, you know, they've come awfully close. They certainly disrupted a presidential election. On the one hand, to what extent we'll probably never know. But yeah, it's sort of like what we don't know out there is probably hurting us a lot more than we realize.
Probably. Let's go ahead and we'll talk, you know, let's talk briefly about what's happened. And of course, this weekend was, I don't know to call it the G7, G6, the G meeting in Canada. And we have some of the major events that we're going to keep our eyes on. You have the president and the North Korean leader. They're going to be speaking tonight. At 10 o'clock Eastern time for the historic summit in Singapore. Prime Minister Theresa May, the UK Prime Minister, faces votes tomorrow that could derail her Brexit policy. We have it's an interesting week. The Federal Reserve, again, is expected to raise rates on Wednesday. The European Central Bank decision on interest rates comes Thursday. The Bank of Japan monetary policy decision, that comes Friday. I think we talked about it briefly last week. You have these three central banks making these key decisions this week. And after the G7 meeting, it'll be real interesting to see what those decisions are. We have and the FIFA expecting more than 3 billion viewers for the World Cup. That begins this week in Russia. Many people throughout the world will be distracted from the news that matters, though. So we'll be talking about all of these details this week. Dave, are you there?
It's true. Yeah, it's true, Melody. In Europe, today the mood was cautiously risk on. You know, with the Stoxx Europe 600 index rising for the first time in 5 days and core European bonds slipping. The euro strengthened and Italian bonds and stocks jumped after that country's new finance minister confirmed his commitment to the common currency, which came as somewhat of a surprise to many of the European market observers. Although the British pound fell in what could be a key week for Theresa May's Brexit strategy, especially as data showed a slump in UK manufacturing. And Canada's dollar fell in the wake of the G6/7 meeting, which ended with deepening tensions over U.S. tariffs and a dispute between our president and Canada's Justin Trudeau. Now, investors are bracing themselves for more geopolitical noise as the week picks up, with Trump saying he feels very good about the imminent summit with Kim Jong-un. And after that, traders are quickly going to switch their focus to the views of the world's biggest central banks, notably the Fed, which is expected to raise interest rates on Wednesday.
Hey, we're heading into a break right now. We'll be right back right after these few short messages. You're listening to Financial Survival, sponsored by Discount Gold and Silver Trading.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and thank you for joining us this afternoon. It is Monday, June 11th. Lots of things going on. All eyes are on the Singapore summit between the United States, President Trump, and North Korean leader. And there's all kinds of discussion of what's going to happen. Everyone is hoping, Washington is hoping, that the bilateral discussions will be the first of many. That the weapons program has become a threat, North Korea's weapons program has become a threat to neighbors such as Seoul and Tokyo, and even for the U.S. mainland. And we all know the problems that are associated with, his desire to protect himself. And we'll have to see about going forward. Geopolitical analysts said that a realistic goal is for both parties to agree to initial confidence building measures that will narrow the massive mistrust between them. What are some of the major points behind this event, Dave?
Well, you know, nuclear policy and security experts, Melody, simply don't believe that North Korea is going to relinquish technology that's become central, really, to Kim Jong-un's and the North's identity. I mean, in the past, the North has said it's going to denuclearize only, that it may denuclearize only if certain conditions are met. Those include terminating America's military presence in South Korea, as well as ending the U.S. regional nuclear umbrella. That umbrella, by the way, is a security arrangement where Washington promises in-kind retaliation on behalf of close allies if they're attacked with nuclear weapons, God forbid. You know, the greatest, Michael Kovrig, who's a senior advisor at the International Crisis Group, said the greatest risk is if we get a political agreement at this summit and the optics look nice, but then it falls apart on the details. Maybe not in 6 months, maybe not in 1 year, but in 5 years. That's why we need a clear step-by-step process that goes action for action and creates a security environment where the North Koreans are actually willing to take steps and the U.S. is in a position to monitor and verify those steps. That, again, according to Michael Kovrig. So even if the North Koreans come out of the summit saying they're committed to denuclearization, that hardly guarantees anything. The Kim regime has made commitments before, as we know, and monitoring compliance to an agreement would likely present a challenge.
Well, you know, and it does. Everybody's been giving a different definition of what the denuclearize actually means, you know, for easing the pressure of the United States along with the international pressure. So, and I did hear that President Trump did say that this is something that he wants to bring through Congress so that it does have a little more meat to whatever agreement that they come up with, and that the next how many generations or of presidents can't change it like he did the Iran deal. So I guess that would be a good thing if they can get this through Congress.
That would be a good thing. Treaties usually almost always trump non-treaty agreements such as the Iranian deal. But you know, whatever it is, Melody, the rest of Asia is watching closely. The outcome of tomorrow's summits of critical importance to the rest of that region particularly in Seoul, Tokyo, and Beijing. Now, if the North insists on the removal of U.S. troops in South Korea in exchange for some kind of staged disarmament, that could send a signal to Asian nations that Washington will no longer be a stable military presence in the region. And it could leave South Korea and Japan exposed to the North's shorter-range missiles. However, a reduced American presence is seen as benefiting Beijing and Moscow, which both want to prevent U.S. dominance in North Asia and fill vacuums other places throughout the world. It's a very difficult balancing act, Melody. It's going to be a very interesting week to see if Trump's team is up to the challenge.
Well, you know, it's, but what is good for America? I mean, why do we have to have troops over there in South Korea? And really, a lot of this, you know, ever since the South Korean Moon was in office, ever since he's come in office, he's been working on this. So I would almost have to say he truly is behind a lot of this moving forward with North Korea. And and I get the relationships with Japan and all that. I'd say, hey, let them fend for themselves. Why can't they be set up for them to fend for themselves?
Well, because it's a good question, and I think reasonable people can disagree on this. But one might say that unless the U.S. is going to become an isolationist, that we have interests throughout the world, not just in our own region, that we need to look out for. So in that sense, South Korea's interest, Japan's interest is our interest. It's why we've had so many thousands of troops in the DMZ for so many years, why we have an Air Force base in Japan. But on the other hand, I think you can agree, agree to disagree that, if we're going to continue to have some kind of troop presence in South Korea, why does it have to be as large as it is now? I don't know. I think these are questions that will be discussed and hopefully shared with the American people in the coming weeks.
And again, I'm going to go back. I agree with you. There's interest there now. And I guess maybe you can't undo what's already been done. So scaling back might be the only option, I don't like being looked at as an isolationist, but if we hadn't protected and had our troops there, is it possible that a lot of what's going on in Singapore would be happening here?
Question you can ask, if we hadn't had a presence, a military presence in South Korea and or Japan for the last 50 or 60 years, what would have China and or Russia have done by now, possibly to exploit, our absence? I don't know. That's the balancing act that we face.
It's true, but China didn't get their legs. They didn't grow their legs until, they grew from the United States. When we go back into, to the 90s when, Clinton signed them into, most favored nation. I think it was Clinton who did the most favored nation, and bringing them into the WTO. But there was never any, follow through with the WTO with China. And, they were able to do things and people blame them stealing, again, technology. My thing is, no, the multinational corporations gave it to them in order to do business there. I mean, how do you call that stealing, to some degree? So I don't know. I mean, what's been done has been done. So where do we go from here to protect our interest? I think scale back, as you mentioned, and I think scaling back would be great, but it is a balancing act.
Well, it is. And now that China and Russia, we know, are are looking to fill these power vacuums, particularly and capitalize on disruption, divisiveness, you know, in the Western alliances. You know, in a strategic sense, it seems like there's a lot more at stake than there might have been, at least with China, 30, 40, 50 years ago.
And what happens when we all lose our power because of the debt that we've also created?
Well, maybe we're all losing it as we speak, you know, and we're so arrogant to, you know, how we perceive ourselves that we don't see the reality of just how shaky ground we're all standing on.
The debt will correct the problems on its own. So, so you know, you did write an article this week in the American Survival newsletter about how Russia and China are working together to figure out how to fill that power vacuum. And would you like to tell us a little more? And I encourage listeners to go to the website dgscoins.com and sign up for a weekly newsletter.
Well, let's talk about some of that. Sure. You know, I start the article by saying, stop what you're doing, check your wallet, and get ready to buy gold and silver, because the global uncertainty among us just shot up a few more levels, and it could get worse before it gets better. That's generally good for precious metals. As we know, leaders of the G7, the so-called allies, argued and called each other not-so-nice names over the weekend, and well, you know, mainly it was us against the six other nations. At the same time, China's and Russia's leaders met, perhaps to plot how they're going to fill that growing vacuum. Is you know, the heads of state of the U.S., Canada, United Kingdom, France, Germany, Italy, and Japan convened in Charlevoix, Quebec on Friday for their annual meeting. Our head left a day early for his Tuesday summit with North Korea. But even before he left for Quebec, you know, Trump took to Twitter to attack Canada six times for unfair trade practices, then threw a few jabs at France and the European Union for, I don't know, good measure. Then after a fairly benign press conference held by Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, as Trump was in the air to Singapore on Saturday, the gloves came off and Trump unleashed. You know, returning to his favorite communications tool, the president criticized Trudeau's false statements and called him very dishonest and weak and meek and mild. And then he announced the U.S.'s withdrawal as a signatory from the traditional and, in this case, largely innocuous group communique released at the end of the summit. Then, really, the tension took a bizarre twist where on Fox News Sunday, U.S. Trade Representative Peter Navarro told Fox's Chris Wallace, referring to Trudeau, there's a special place in hell for any foreign leader that engages in bad faith diplomacy with President Donald J. Trump and then tries to stab him in the back on the way out the door. I mean, these are our closest allies, Melody.
Yeah, I don't like this Peter Navarro. You know, I don't know. They're acting like, you know, you can say something without, again, we talk about calling each other's names and, you know, they're acting like a bunch of children. And, you know, it's just, go ahead.
No, I'm just going to say, you've got a problem. Let's say it to each other's face, but keep it in the family. Don't play it out on international news where our enemies, people who do not have our best interests at heart, you know, can take advantage of it.
And so it's, I agree. But what Navarro said, and Larry Kudlow even backed him up. And I'm thinking, you know, who are these people? A lot of people like this type of communique, I guess. But I'm, You know, I agree. Keep it between yourselves and lead. And anyway, but as they were calling each other's names and, you know, so forth and whatnot, you have the Chinese leader Xi Jinping and Putin. They met on Friday, And Putin got a very nice award. And I do agree with Trump here. He says that Russia, I don't know if it's for the same reasons, but I do believe that Putin should be back into that G7, because it is the same as you keep your friends close and your enemies closer. At least he wouldn't be in China, you know, becoming all this friendly.
There's something to be said for that.
But after saying that, what do you have to say about it, Dave?
Well, Xi and Putin don't appear to think they have the cachet, even together, to create a new system, a new world order, as it were. Nor is it clear that they want to trash U.S.-led institutions, NATO, G7, for example, that have anchored the global economy and the political order since World War II. But, you know, however distrustful the duo may be of each other, a growing number of observers do believe that Xi and Putin want to feel out ways to transition to a new world. You know, that's where a loose alliance of China and Russia and their allies become the geopolitical equals of the West. You know, geopolitical spectacles such as, you know, the G7 summit mudslinging just feed Xi's and particularly Putin's convictions that the West is in free fall. I mean, the U.S. threatening to leave NAFTA after it withdrew from the TPP has strained relations with, you know, Mexico and Canada. U.S. backing out of the Iranian deal and the Paris Climate Accord, plus the U.S. trade war with our European allies, you know, sort of on the horizon, bashing the WTO over its policing, you know, trade disputes, rightly so in that case, but nevertheless, have, you know, left our friends wondering what's next. You know, China's long-term vision, as we've told listeners before, is a world reconnected by its big infrastructure and initiatives, namely its Belt and Road Initiative, the Marshall Plan of the new millennium. When it's done, Melody, the system of ports and railroads and pipelines that cover 65 countries are going to be the new face of China's foreign policy.
I believe that is their, you know, their 25 and 50-year plan. And
indeed.
Yeah, and you know what? It's, and again, we come back to the debt. Don't know if the debt will allow them to do it, but they're certainly setting the stage to which they can. And so you have a lot of these world-leading economies that are balking, and they're looking at this BRI, the Belt and Road Initiative, as a Trojan horse for the Chinese geopolitical, the military, and economic designs.
Yeah, I mean, you know, while America picks fights with our allies over trade and national security, China's thinking long term and acting now, seemingly everywhere. Putin just probably realized, hey, I didn't realize how quickly and easily my vision would come to pass.
Hey, we're heading into a break. We're going to finish that up, and then we're going to talk about the Fed. We're going to talk about gold and silver, how that's going to prosper from the Fed rate hike. So make sure you stay tuned. We'll be back just in a few short minutes.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Silver is beginning to move up $17 today, and for all your silver purchases, we're going to include free shipping this week. So even if you purchase 20 Silver Eagles, we'll include free shipping for you. So give us a call at 1-800. Shipping and silver is heavy. Silver is expensive to ship. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. You know, Dave, since the creation of 1913, the Federal Reserve has initiated 18 interest rate hiking campaigns. And every single one of those instances, the end result was a large stock market decline, a recession, or both. So we are now in the 19th rate tightening cycle since 1913, but many of the experts are insisting that things will somehow, it's going to be different this time, Dave. Did you not know that?
I didn't know that.
Well, let me tell you. They have assured us that the U.S. economy will continue to grow, that stock prices will continue to soar. And tomorrow I'm going to talk a little bit about stock buybacks. I mean, the number of that is just astounding. And you want to know why we're over 25,000. Of course, the truth is that if sometime happens 18 times in a row, there's a really good chance that it will happen on the 19th time also. And of course, we're talking about with rate hikes that you do either enter into a recession, a market decline, or both. And we've been on this endless roller coaster ride ever since 1913, when they thought they'd be able to control our booms and busts. And things can always seem quite pleasant when the economy is on one of the upswings, but the downswing is always very painful. There was an economist, Lance Roberts, that pointed out that this correlation between rate hiking cycles and economic troubles found that a sustained interest rate hiking campaign, as undertaken by the Fed, has always resulted in that negative stock market return. Dave?
Yeah, you know, Roberts believes that the unprecedented intervention by the Fed that we've seen in recent years, Melody, has fueled, as you're going to talk about tomorrow, these corporate stock buybacks, and you know, which essentially in his mind has delayed the inevitable stock market correction, the major correction of the 50% sort that folks like David Stockman are talking about. So what gives? Well, in a word, you said it, the Fed. You know, having kept interest rates near zero for several years and having filled corporate coffers with super cheap debt that used to fuel the market that debt, which has been used to fuel market bubbles sustaining corporate buybacks, the Fed has delayed the inevitable. We at Discount Gold and Silver agree with Roberts. A colossal stock market correction is inevitably coming. Sooner than we think, we don't know when, we don't know exactly what will trigger it, but there's so much pressure now on it, and so many reasons why the paper market should not be going up, that, you know, you've just got to be prepared. You know, the warning signs are all around us. You know, we've talked about many times recently, junk bonds are often an early warning sign for a major financial crisis. And it's extremely interesting that Deutsche Bank is planning a fire sale of all of their energy junk bonds. Moody's is warning that when the economy weakens, we'll see an avalanche of defaults like we haven't seen before, even in the Great Recession. You know, corporate debt to GDP and investor risk appetite is reminding a lot of veterans of previous credit peaks. And now, Melody, the most desperate bank in the world, Deutsche, is offering its whole energy debt in one sale, just as high-yield issuance starts to slump. This is one of the strongest indications yet that things are about to take a major turn for the worse in the global financial system. Mel?
And you know, everything, just like I was getting a drink there because my throat, timing is everything.
There you go.
On live radio and in politics. And when the next crisis comes, most voters won't even consider the fact that it has been building for a very long time. And all they're going to care about is who is in office at that time. And of course, who also was as it goes the same with analysts, you know, with predictions. We've been talking about it for years. And those who get credit will be the ones that are reporting on it at that point in time. They'll get the credit for it. But that's okay. That's okay. But for the moment, most of the experts are assuring us that things will be rosy for the foreseeable future. And there was a couple of prominent analysts over at Goldman Sachs. Everybody knows I'm not a fan of Goldman Sachs, but they do have some analysts over there, and they're saying that the tech stock prices are likely to continue to rise. Unlike the technology mania of the 90s, most of the success can be explained by strong fundamentals. That's exactly the same thing, though, that they said in the 90s. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's not going to change. It's not, you know, nothing's going to happen to the tech stocks. But yet, I was also reading about they're not having any more breakthroughs in technology. I mean, we might see it in certain areas, but they're having difficulties. So, you know, we'll see about tech stocks, Dave, whether they truly have strong fundamentals or not.
You know, you like to say the optimists will continue to be right up until the moment that the bubble finally bursts.
Yeah.
When they're no longer right, and in fact, wrong in a big way. You know, whenever the Fed starts raising rates, it's always resulted in a bad ending. And we believe this time will be no different. And anyone that's trying to convince you otherwise is just being delusional.
Oh, let's see. What else are we going to talk about today? It was, how about median income? Median income has gone nowhere since the Great Recession. There's a lot of debate out there whether Americans are better off financially since 2008. Part of that argument is based on government data. The Bureau of Labor Statistics released income data for the first quarter of 2018, and they said that the median weekly earnings of the nation's 113 million full-time wage and salary workers were $881 in the first quarter of 2018. That was about 1.8% higher than a year earlier, compared with a gain of 2.2% in the CPI over the same period. So, by this measure, Americans have made huge progress. In the first quarter of 2009, the comparable figure was 732. However, if you look at the median weekly data, it looks very different when calculated in constant dollars. In this case, the number for the first quarter of 2009 is really $340,500. For the first quarter of this year, the number is $350. Over the 2008 to 2018 period, the quarterly figure never topped $353, which it hit in the second and third quarters last year.
Yeah, and as we know, Melody, wages are central to the debate about how the economy is recovering, how quickly it could fall into recession again as well, and the consumer spending portion of GDP. As we know, roughly two-thirds of GDP is based on consumer spending. Now, one argument that consumer spending is not and will not be a problem is that from 2009 to the present, prices for most things have risen very little, at least as measured by the government's CPI. Essentially, there has been what's called muted inflation. That started to change more recently, particularly in terms of oil and gas and, to a lesser extent, food. Oil and gas prices have spiked in the last several months, and the price of gas is at a multi-year high. Another year of stagnant wages may be the largest drag on the economy, particularly if the cost of living spikes in the second half of the year.
And we've talked about this before in this program, and it's a big issue out there. In coming years, you have U.S. workers, especially low-skilled, low-wage workers, are going to face major economic disruption. As we see more automation and the robotic revolution replace millions of jobs once held by humans, policymakers and businesses, they're all ill-prepared to help workers navigate the transition and adapt the skills needed to survive this economic tsunami. That's why you have a lot of these tech companies that are pushing the UBI, the universal basic income. They want government to take care of the people instead of if they're pushing the technology to replace employees with automation and robotic revolution that's going to replace millions of jobs. Well, maybe they should pay for those,
Out of their hundreds of billions of dollars in new profits?
Yeah, if you add their profits together, you're talking trillions of dollars.
Come on, they're for buybacks.
Oh, I know. Silly me. But it is a problem. And the policymakers are not moving quickly enough to update the education system. It doesn't provide workers with the skills that are going to be needed when these bottom-tier jobs are replaced by automation.
Yeah, you know, this is scary. This is moving so quickly. I wonder what it's going to take to get behind it and actually try to control its impact on workers. At least 10 million U.S. jobs are at high risk of losing out to automation, and this just over the next decade, as companies replace us with machines. That's from a recent analysis by research firm CB Insights. You know, some of the top jobs at risk include fast casual cooks, think burger makers and coffee servers. In fact, one burger chain in California is already making use of a robot called Flippy to cook burgers. Oh, movers, warehouse workers, and retail workers, including cashiers, are also threatened, according to the report. Now, as autonomous cars move from myth to reality, as I think they're doing all too quickly, taxi drivers too, and I suppose Uber drivers could become a thing of the past. And coming at the same time, Melody, when millions of Americans say they don't believe they'll ever be able to retire.
Yeah, there's Americans don't know how much money they need to save for retirement. It was last week I was talking about where that you need $250,000 just for your health care.
Yeah.
If you're a married couple. Mm-hmm. So now there's 19 million Americans don't think they'll retire at all. And this was a new survey by Bankrate. 61% of Americans are unsure about their savings. For those that do have an estimate, the median amount is $650,000. Millennials are more likely than other generations to be unsure about their retirement needs. 9% of both millennials, they're 18 to 37 years old, and baby boomers, 54 to 72 years old, said they never plan to retire. The key to retirement savings is to actually save for retirement. Put away at least 10% of your pay. It's difficult. 10% is a lot.
Yeah.
Especially when you have your garbage rates go higher. I had to go back to that.
That was good. That was a good bringing it full circle. I'm impressed.
And we only have two more minutes of the program. That's what I meant. 9%. Both millennials and baby boomers said they never planned to retire.
Gosh.
And more than half of Americans have sought advice on retirement planning. $650,000 to retire. Mm. How do people retire at all?
On that amount, living very modestly. That same survey found that a little over one quarter consulted a personal financial advisor, 21% asked family or friends, 11% used an online retirement calculator, and 10% contacted a bank or financial institution. 7% said they need between $250,000 and $500,000 for retirement. Wow. 8% believe they need to save either $250,000 or less, $500,000 to $1 million, or over $1 million. I guess that's 8% each. Gen Xers are twice as likely as other age groups to say they need over $1 million to retire. Residents of the Northeast and West are also more likely to target more than $1 million in savings. Interestingly, another 17% said that most or all of their retirement money will come from Social Security. An analyst said Social Security will help fund a sizable portion of most retirements, even for millennials, despite declarations that the pension program will soon go bankrupt. Well, we shall see, Melody. We shall see.
Yeah, so ladies and gentlemen, one way that you can prepare for your future, and we've heard time and time again, you know, it's going to be the children and the grandchildren that's, you know, when this debt comes due, they're the ones that truly are going to be paying for all the mismanagement of government, these funds, our money. And one way that you can help them to distribute your wealth with gold and silver.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that will protect them against the ravages of inflation. Every day you lose against inflation. Every day your dollar buys less and less. Prices go higher and higher. It takes more of those dollars. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Until then, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back tomorrow. I'll be back with Butch Paul. Dave, thank you for joining me this afternoon. And be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye.
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.